The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
All of us have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Well, welcome to our show again today. We have another great episode on racial healing. You know that racism is not our fault. We were born into part of this story, and we don't really know the other stories that are out there. We're digging our way out of the ditch that we have inherited, and the saints of the 60s did their job, and they're still doing their job because there's more work to do. Yeah, it was an error. We erroneously learned our way into racism, and we will intentionally work our way out. And that's what this show is about. Well, today's show is titled, Can Sexual Orientation and Racial Healing Coexist? If you are a lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transsexual, or LGBT, what difference does race make? Is sexual orientation in the USA racialized or linked to racism? How is coming out as an LGBT person in white America shaped by race? How are the experiences of people of color with the same sexual orientation influenced by race and culture? How do you navigate at times the unspoken tension or competition across the backdrop of civil rights? And can LGBT civil rights be seen in the same plane as racial civil rights? And what about white privilege? How does that fit in? And more and more and more. Well, I am delighted that we're going to be joined today with two guests who can help us weave our way through the fact that maybe sexual orientation and racial healing can coexist. We are joined by the award-winning and acclaimed professor, Dr. James Croteau, who is a professor at Western Michigan University, and he is a fellow of both the Society of Counseling Psychology and Sociology Society, the Society for the Psychological Study of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual Issues with the American Psychological Association. His practice and scholarship include LGBT issues, race in white America, and the intersection of race and sexual orientation among white LGBT people. And he's received an outstanding achievement award from the APA, and he's edited books and written articles and written books for that matter. And he writes on race and sexual orientation and multicultural counseling. We're also very privileged to be joined by award-winning expert Donna R. Payne, who's the Associate Director of Diversity for the Human Rights Campaign, that's HRC. And she works with civil rights organizations, religious and people of color communities, and leads the HRC's Historically Black Colleges and University programs. She received the Rosa Parks Award and is an African-American lesbian activist and a member of the Metropolitan Community Church. Well, welcome to the show, Jim and Donna.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you're more than welcome. Well, you know, when we start on this topic, there are a number of people that might say, why are you talking about this? But before we get to all of that, Jim, can you tell us a little bit about why you do this work? You've been on this show before with a series about how to help European Americans or white people move past barriers that prevent the healing from a psychological and counseling perspective. But why are you interested in doing this particular work on sexual orientation and the intersection of racial healing?
Well, I mean, I think the big reason is consistent with the show. I mean, I think, you know, you talked about the ditch of racism that we all get thrown into, and I think sexual orientation and how we understand that and how I understand myself as a gay man has been thrown into that same ditch. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in the southern United States. And so I grew up, I'm a white man, so I grew up in a suburb of Memphis, Tennessee, and I grew up with this notion, you know, that what was going to happen in my life was going to be determined based on my individual merit. It's a very individualistic kind of perspective on the world, mm-hmm. very little sense that sort of where you fit in terms of social position, where you fit into groups and how you were treated in the world. I didn't think any of that mattered to me. It wouldn't affect my life. Mm-hmm. And then, as I became aware of my sexuality, that changed. You know, it was a different time in the 60s and 70s, particularly in the South, where, you know, I literally hated myself for my sexual orientation, kept it a secret. I mean, it really threatened, I think, to really destroy my life. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't realize at the time, and I've only sort of come to sort of even after coming out, is one of the real struggles for me was about racism. It was about a racialized kind of perspective on my life. Because in order to come out, you really have to realize that any negative feelings you're having about yourself due to your sexuality is not yours. It's not your moral character. It's about the way that society has defined same-sex sexuality in negative ways. But uh-huh. that's essentially coming to see the world from a you're not treated by your merit. Mm-hmm, you're treated mm-hmm. by the prejudices that are out there against certain social groups. So it's like I had to change my whole world view in order to sort of come to terms with it. And so I think we miss that a lot when we start talking about sexual orientation. We missed how racialized it is. And that's sort of one of the effects on my own life. But, I mean, another big effect is that the consequence of that is that our image of what it means to be lesbian, gay, or bisexual in the world is a white image. And it's mm-hmm. a white story because that's the everything in our culture is. Everything is defined by that. And so is the sexual orientation story. And then that excludes the lives of people of color who have same-sex sexual orientations. So
well,
it's
let me
all
make sure
interwoven together, and I hope we can unpack some of that today.
Oh, that would be very good. Let me make sure that I understand one part of what you said, that the story of sexual orientation in this country is a white story, as in white European story? Did I understand
it
that right?
It is in terms of how it's defined.
Ah.
You know, the image of it. Like, mm-hmm. like I can think of, if you look at in recent years, and it's been a very great thing, in recent years there are beginning to be images of lesbian, gay, and somewhat bisexual people in the media. You know, but those images are still few in number, and they're way predominantly white and middle class and well-educated. And that's not the story of same-sex sexual orientation in America. But it's the, you know, it's a real struggle to find the image of yourself sometimes, and that's really important psychologically. So now I'm beginning to be able to find some images of myself as a white middle-class gay man, but those images don't reach the diversity of people who have a same-sex sexual orientation, and so they can't even see themselves around them, and so that they can come to a positive sense of identity.
Mm-hmm. So is that to say that sexual orientation in the U.S. is racialized or linked to racism?
Well, I would say, of course, isn't everything, and so mm-hmm. why shouldn't it be? Mm-hmm. And yes, it is, but we don't see the connection very often, and I think seeing that connection is important psychologically for individuals, but it's also really important when we start talking about what to do about all of this, what to do about both racism and heterosexism.
Well, you know, we had a caller who left this message, and this is Aziz in Kansas City, Missouri, who is an ardent listener to the show. And his message was, race and gayism, as he says, doesn't have anything to do with each other. Why are you trying to put them together? The Roman Empire and Rome and Greek days were primarily gay anyway. That's sexual preference. Most of them were white people anyway. It didn't matter what your pigmentation was. This was what the rulers did. When in Rome, do as the Romans do here, you don't have to be gay. How would you respond to that, Jim?
Well, I'm not going to respond to the comments about Rome, and I'm not a historian, and I don't, but I think his main point is that you can't put being gay and race sort of on the same plane to really look at it and try to examine it, I think is what he's saying. Mm-hmm. And at one level, I think I want to strongly agree with that. And at another level, I have to disagree with it too. Mm-hmm. Because the reason why we struggle with sexual orientation legally, culturally, and individuals struggle with that is because we have inaccurate and derogatory information out there about gay, lesbian, and bisexual people and other people with the same sex sexual orientation. And so in that sense, it's oppression, like racism is oppression. Now, the problem with that, though, and the pushback that, you know, I think is legitimate is because a lot of times what the white, predominantly white gay and lesbian people and predominantly white gay and lesbian communities have sometimes wanted to, you know, say sexual orientation oppression and race oppression, and they want to almost equate it. They want to say it's the same thing. They want to say it, and that's a problematic, I think. And it's also involves this kind of thing where, you know, well, I'm white, so I can say that, you know, the racial civil rights struggle is now, you know, happening with gay people and happening with gay marriage fights and those kinds of things, and just kind of take that experience and say it's mine. And you can see that I, as a white person, I'm going to take the experience with racial civil rights and define it the way that I want to define it. And so there's all this kind of really complex stuff that pushes a lot of buttons that are out there that, you know, we haven't really began to talk about that in any kind of discourse in this country at all. But it really divides people unnecessarily. And I think a lot of it is white people's responsibility. It's the way that white, gay, and lesbian people have fallen into the ditch, have played along with kind of racist notions.
Well, can you kind of unpack a little bit of that before we go to break? Is LGBT or GLBT civil rights really on the same plane as racial civil rights? How would you answer that?
My first answer really, it's kind of like, who is answering that question is important. I think as a white gay man, it's really important for me to be able to answer that question and say no to it. Because if I miss so much if I get focused on gay and lesbian and bisexual civil rights, and I miss so much that how racism still has such a grip on us in this country right now, and I'm apt to ignore that, and I'm apt to downplay that. I think race is central to the sort of psychological and social setup. Racism is central to how we divide people up in this country. I mean, that's we learned it through slavery and through all the kinds of racist definitions that have happened since then, that's kind of the primary way that we see oppression in this country, and we put one group of people over another. And so I think if I, as a white gay man, need to be able to centralize race, need to be able to see and feel my whiteness, to know what that means for me, to know how it's hurt people of color, to know how it hurts me, And I've got to see that as central in a way that I'm not apt to do unless I really go out of my way. I see being gay as central. I mean, that was a life and death thing for me, mm-hmm. you know. And so my job is to come to see why it is being just as central and to see how that affects everything else, including my sexual orientation. So some of that question depends on who you are, I think, in terms of how you might answer it. Donna might have a different answer.
Well, we're going to get to that pretty soon, because Donna has a whole realm of areas of expertise that we want to hear from, and we're coming up very close to our break right now. And maybe to finish off this segment, Jim, you might tell us, you know, this unspoken tension or competition between the backdrop of civil rights, is this something that we need to really look deeper into for the benefit of all of us to heal with, you know, a basic foundation of racism? What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think it is. You know, what happens, like in my education work on college campuses around LGBT issues, I see way too often, you know, those of us who are white and LGBT trying to do education around this. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of get in front of a group of people and we start talking about racism and racial civil rights as if it were we use it to promote LGBT civil rights without any regard and any depth of understanding and commitment to doing something about racism. And I think that's offensive.
Oh, my gosh.
For some people of color, it's offensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we will be right back from our break, and we'll get a chance to hear a little more from Donna Payne.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening. Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back to our show. I'm delighted that we have our guests, Jim Croteau, professor at Western Michigan University, and also Donna Arpine, who's associate director of diversity at the Human Rights Campaign. Well, Donna, we didn't get a chance really to hear your voice a lot in this first segment, and maybe we could start with really finding out a little bit about HRC, which many of our listening audience may not know about. What is it?
Oh, great. Well, first let me tell you something about me. I am an African-American lesbian that actually comes from Jim's hometown, too, Memphis, Tennessee. And I have felt that it was very important to bridge my being an African-American into my lesbian identity or LGBT cultural identity. And I don't believe that I have to compartmentalize or box any part of my life in order to be who I am. So I am at that intersection of bridging all of those pieces together. And that is why I've been in the movement for over 14 years. And I work at the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest civil rights organization working to achieve equality for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender American. And we have a force of 1.5 million members and supporters nationwide. We do grassroots mobilization to bring action in diverse communities and invest strategically to elect fair-minded individuals to office and educate the public about LGBT issues. And that's what the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, is about.
Well, now, why do you, what drew you specifically to this work?
Well, I have a background in political science, and I always wanted to be someone that was very political and part of the movement. I was born into the civil rights movement, so to speak, because I was right in Memphis, and it was 1963. And basically everything was breaking loose, if Jim can understand that time.
Yes.
but during that time, I came from a family that very staunch in the African American social network, meaning that the backdrop of my life was the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I was brought up in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and my father was a minister in the United Methodist Church, and I had to adhere to all of the rules as a good black southern girl. Had to adhere to the rules of being brought up in a religious family. And so what I have come to understand is that even with my background, I thought that I would never be able to be a part of my movement, meaning the African American movement, and be accepted. And I realized in going through the process of bringing all of my pieces together that I could be successful and be who I am with all parts of me.
Well, that's quite a story. That is quite a story, Donna, and I'm sure that others have stories like that as well that, you know, that have prompted them to look at that intersection of race and sexual orientation. Well, how was it for you to come out? That's part of this show, too, as it relates to your experience or the experiences of people of color and that whole phrase, coming out.
It was a difficult process. And I'll start out by saying that, first of all, I got a whiff of understanding at a young age, somewhere around 12, 13, and 14, that in the African American church, you were not supposed to speak of LGBT or any type of names as such. You were not to even think that existed. And my mother once said to me there was a lady in the choir that was a lesbian, and she was bold enough to bring her partner with her on one of the choir trips. And my mother said to me in the car, okay, here's what you're going to do. You are not going to say anything about that lady. You won't speak or say anything about her girlfriend. We just don't talk about that, okay? And that was my lesson before I got out of the car and witnessed what I later understood later was a African-American lesbian couple.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, in this regard, coming out, that phrase or term, are you maybe suggesting that this, your experiences are the experiences of other people of color in terms of coming out that way, not to be talked about?
Yes. Mainly when you first understand that you are not accepted in that way, then of course you become alienated from the network, your community of color. So in my African American community, I had a double life going on. I was expected to marry. I was sent to college and expected to marry a black man that would be educated also, so that I could bring the fruits of our labor back to the African American community. And what happened is that I became alienated at school, and very down and depressed because I was not fitting into what I was expected to bring home. I had a girlfriend. So then I lied for about 10 years, 8 to 10 years of lying and using a double life so that I would not disappoint the family or the black church. And when I finally accepted that it was a possibility for me to go to a gay church, because I heard through word of mouth that there was a gay church, I moved to Washington, D.C., and I went to a gay church. But then I quickly realized that I had to, in order to be a part of the LGBT movement of the church, I had to give up my roots in terms of being African American networking. So I left the black church.
Now, is that the same kind of thing within other communities of color, for example?
Exactly.
How about Native Americans? Is that the same kind of context for people who identify with being Native American in this country?
Well,
is that
in the Native American community, what has occurred is that they carry the doubleness of who they are, but there is a name for it in the Native American community, and that is you are two-spirited. So there is a understanding that you are two-spirited, but they may not understand you totally. However, they will accept that you are different, and they give you a name. In the African American community, there is no name, and you don't have anywhere to go. In the Hispanic culture, there is not a name per se, but what happens to you is that you become alienated because you can't fit in you have to follow the strict rules in the community, and you are also a part of the Catholic community, and your religious part plays a huge factor in what you do. So you are living a double life there too.
Well, you know, in this regard, Jim, let's get back with you for a minute on this whole idea of coming out within the European American or white community. Can you kind of give us your perspective on what that's like and how it's shaped by race?
Well, I think, you know, just in contrast to what Donna was just saying, you know, she was talking about this sense of alienation from her home community that she both wanted to and was expected to give back to. And so that with white people, what racism does to us is it tells us, you're an individual. You're not anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, so that when we get heterosexism and homophobia directed at us, it's not that sense of losing this home base that our whole identity is shaped around. Mm. You know, so it's like it's a very different experience. Now that in part is what has been, it's the price white people pay for racism, is that we don't have a sense that we are part of a people. As a matter of fact, the first time I had a sense of that I belonged to a group of people was when I came out and when I discovered there was a lesbian and gay community. And I had that for the first time in my life, I had a sense of my people. So it's a very different experience from that angle. And again, you know, because it's been racialized and because it's culturally different, it's a very different experience.
Well, you know, it does sound like it, very much so. So this whole idea, notion in our country of individual, pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of mentality or approach to life and living. So if you are a European American, there isn't basically the community, or it's the community of whiteness, which is really, you know, a whole different
community.
Yeah, right.
It's really non-community is what it is.
Right.
Well, as African American, you have such a strong commitment to the community, because that's all that you had in the religious sector. So the religious is your political and your social. It encompasses everything. So when you have to let go, you are at the mercy of others.
Can you say that again, Donna? When you have to let go.
When you have to let go of that network, that community, because it's all tied together, then you become the mercy of others, because they may not understand you and the culture that you have been raised in.
Well, I'll tell you, on that note, we're going to go to break and we will be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back to our show. Our guests today are Dr. James Croteau from Western Michigan University and Donna R. Payne, who's Associate Director of Diversity and Human Rights at the Human Rights Campaign. And before we went on break, Donna, we were talking with you and Jim about what is the difference in culturally of a person who is LGBT coming out. And you said something, and I ask you to repeat it because it was really very profound, something like that when people of color in African-American community and maybe Latino community come out, there's nowhere to go because it's so constructed around community. The culture is set around community of people. And Jim, you were saying that in the European American community, individualism takes center stage. So when someone comes out as LGBT, that the individual has a background of really acting out as an individual. Well, it kind of begs the question that we were talking about at break. Well, is there racism or a need for racial healing within the LGBT community? What do you think, Jim?
Donna, do you want to take that one first? Or
well, there is some need for racial healing as time goes on, and I think it is actually happening. I can definitely verify that it's actually happening. But it's something that I think you need to know. The Human Rights Campaign did a Equality for survey of over 5,000 people of color across the country in 2009, and they asked that specific question about how do LGBT people of color say they are treated by the white community, the white LGBT community. And I'm glad to say that at least overall about 65% said that you can be treated as the same as any other LGBT person. But what happened is that when you started to break down, well, how do you actually feel, then we came up with percentages of 47% that said they feel excluded a lot of time or discriminated against within the white LGBT community. So those were the numbers and the factors that play in bringing together all of the community. But we are at the middle of doing that, and we have come a long way. But you do have mixed feelings in the LGBT community about whether or not we all are working together on this at the same time, on the same note.
Well, is that unusual, Jim, or what is your contribution?
Well, yeah, a couple of things there. I mean, one is that the numbers are probably a little worse than they look, would be my guess, because the people sampled there are probably people who are more involved in the predominantly white LGBT communities, and probably not as many of people of color who are less involved in those communities. So you may get a little positive bias to the numbers, but numbers, you know, only mean so much. I mean, I think it's clear that there's racism in the white LGBT community, and why shouldn't there be? I mean, we all are thrown in the ditch, and just because you're gay doesn't mean you're not thrown in the ditch, too. But one of the things that I think is really important there, though, is I've done a lot of consultation with predominantly white LGBT organizations, and too often we approach this from the perspective, we white people approach it from the perspective of, I need to bring in some people of color into this organization. And it's kind of that's the approach, and it's people have been trying to do that for a couple of decades now, and it hasn't been working very well because we're bringing them into organizations that are run and set up for and by white people, by white LGBT people. And so I think some of the work that's beginning to happen that Donna's referring to, where the whole task is seen as much more important. We start really saying, how have we set up this organization? How have we defined what it means to be LGBT? And how wide is that? And how much do we need to disassemble that? And that's the only way, I think, that that we begin to, really have an LGBT community that's not defined by white racism. And in this beginning, I agree with Donna. I see HRC and some other LGBT organizations taking this, that have historically been predominantly white, taking this so much more seriously and really doing positive efforts in the direction and not just kind of token efforts.
Well, you know,
there is one thing that came to fruition in doing this study. Diversity may be a reality, but inclusion is the real challenge. So that's where it breaks down, like actually leveraging differences and valuing differences. That's the challenge that we see.
Well, it almost seems like it's a reflection of the larger society in a way. And, you know, we had a caller, Lorraine from Ann Arbor, Michigan, who has this to say. Is it a double jeopardy to be a black male and gay? I feel sorry for someone who is. How do they handle it? I would never come out of the closet. Racism is such a huge issue for black males. White males are more accepted because they usually have more money and power of white privilege and position. Does the gay community treat black males any better?
Well, I would have to actually rely upon the Equality Ford study, and it did point out that African-American males do have a more difficult time in the community, and it also stated that sexism is widespread in the LGBT community, too. So when I say sexism, I'm directly speaking in terms of lesbians not being valued or leveraged as highly either.
Well, I noticed, you know, kind of your reaction with this a bit, Donna. Is this something that's talked about a lot in the community?
Yes.
Can you kind of, in what frame is this talked about? That literally, is it that black males who are gay are in double jeopardy?
Well, the double jeopardy actually is spoken of a lot in the African American community because, yes, it's black, male, and gay. And then there's the triple jeopardy for lesbians that is spoken of, and that is black, woman, and gay. So, you know, you can toss up and come up with who is worse than the other, but it is an ongoing conversation that I'm speaking of. It happens a lot.
Well,
and
also
it's not specifically that there's any type of program format set up to help with that. That has not occurred, but just trust that the conversation and everything has occurred a lot for the past 10 years.
Well, Jim, what is your cut? You specifically, your cut on white privilege, and how does it fit into the LGBT issues related to different cultural groups?
Well, I mean, I think it's the it's probably one of the major factors. I mean, I think that for racism to change overall, or for racism to change within LGBT communities, you know, white people are going to need to change. And one of the real stumbling blocks there is for white LGBT people is that we're really tempted to see, you know, I'm tempted to see my gay identity as what I am, because it has been something that was a matter of life and death. I mean, I rolled a pill bottle around in my hand when I was a young person because of being gay. And so being able to affirm that is such a central part of who I am. The trick then for me is to be able to see and feel my whiteness and what happens to me because I'm white in the world, for that to be as central of an identity for me as being gay. And when it can be, then it starts changing everything. I start finding my own investment in wanting to end racism, and it starts opening things up in ways that don't open up as long as we have this, and Donna, you may not be critical of this, but I'm kind of critical of this coalition mentality we have sometimes because it has some negative connotations to it. Like, well, gay and lesbian organizations should get together with racial civil rights organizations and help each other out, as if the two issues were separate, which, by the way, means there aren't any people of color who are LGBT. If we say, you know, one's working on race and one's working on sexual orientation and they're separate, they're not separate. They're integrated. And so that racism is my issue. And if white people started feeling like racism was my issue and I had a stake in ending white superiority, then things change a lot faster. And I think we're just beginning to get there with the LGBT community. And I think the LGBT community is better off than the wider community, by the way. I think we've done more work in this area. I work with some local anti-racism organizations. And among the white people working in those organizations, they're disproportionately LGBT, more than 10%. And I think it's because of what Donna says, that there is a beginning of some consciousness. You know, we still have a very long way to go. And I think especially when you get down into, you know, mid-sized cities in the Midwest and the LGBT groups in those cities, they're still predominantly white and they're still not very inclusive, very much inclusion, like Donna was saying, going on.
Well, you know, Jim, I'm dying to ask this question, and maybe our listening audience is interested too. Is this to say, based on what you've said, that in order to get rid of, so to speak, the oppression being an LGBT person, you must deal with racism?
I would say emphatically yes. I don't know if Donna has kind of the same or different take on it than
well,
me, but I would say emphatically,
I would,
yes.
I would add some other complex pieces to it. First of all, one of the things that everyone should know and understand, and so that would be for white LGBT people to understand, as an African-American, a Hispanic, a Latino, or Asian, LGBT person, you identify with your race first. Mm-hmm. And let me make sure you understand. You identify with race first. Second is ethnicity. Third is gender. And last is sexual orientation.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
oh,
right.
My goodness. So, well, that's quite a list, Donna, here. That's quite
that
a list.
Is. That is, and as a lot of people, is a wake-up call when we did the study, but it and we rolled out what, you know, how people should understand this, but it was also understanding from my own upbringing of what I feel first. And the reason why is because it's called surface visibility. It is how you are seen in the world, and that's mm-hmm. very important for the white LGBT community to understand. You identify with your race first because that is how you are seen in the world. Surface
well, I tell you,
visibility.
This is a. We're going to come right back. We'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back. We are with our guests, James Croteau from Western Michigan University and Donna Payne from the Human Rights Campaign. And we have a lot more that we could talk about, but we do have a caller that is waiting. This is Karen from Washington, D.C., and you have a question? Welcome, Karen.
Hi, thank you for taking my question.
Certainly.
It is for Ms. Payne, in particular regarding her comment, the difference between diversity and inclusion. At what point in time was there recognition that diversity wasn't doing the job and that inclusion was something that needed to be introduced?
Well, thank you so much, Karen.
It began for HRC, it began about 8 years ago when you had diversity programs that would bring in people of color, but they never stayed. They just simply never stayed. And with time, we all learned that inclusion is a bigger impact, has a bigger impact on people staying and being a part of things because they feel culturally comfortable. And that's the thing, to make people feel culturally comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for that question, Karen, and Donna, for your response to it. Well, before we went on break, we were talking about this whole notion of race first and surface visibility. And did you have a comment about that, Jim, as well?
Yeah, I just really wanted to, thank Donna for saying that because I think it's sort of at the heart of when there's felt tension around race and sexual orientation. For white Americans, yeah, clearly I think for most of us, we'll say I'm lesbian, gay, bisexual first. And we're lucky to even have any awareness of identifying with white at all. And if you use the same notion that Donna mentioned about surface visibility, it doesn't match reality very well. Because when I walk into the place where you get your driver's license, people don't treat me as a gay man. People treat me as a white man. Mm-hmm. And yet I don't identify with that. And so that's the heart of the problem of well-intentioned white people trying to work on racism, is that we don't have a sense that we walk around and the world is white, and we need to have that sense. And once we start having that sense, then, you know, our anti-racism efforts become a lot better. So I think white people need to do the same thing. We need to be able to say, I'm white first at some level, and because that's how we're treated on the surface in terms of surface visibility.
Well, that is
It's a very challenging thing, by the way. It's very challenging because, you know, again, you know, coming out as gay saved my life, you know, so it's very challenging for me to say that race matters and can matter more in my life.
Mm-hmm. So is that to say that it kind of defines a common element among all the masses of people in this country, that surface visibility?
I think so. And again, you know, people of color tend to be a lot more conscious of that, and white people tend to have very little consciousness of it. And one of the main things that holds racism in place, in my opinion.
Well, I have to tell you all, we only have a few more minutes left in the show, and we have a couple of other questions that have come in. We'll see how far we get with them. And I want to leave us room for one of these last questions about building approaches, team building approaches. But one of these, this might just be a comment that's already been answered, and if so, we can really move on. This is one from a JR in Battle Creek. Why are many African American churches so intolerant of difference when African Americans themselves have been subjected to violence and oppression a lot of times as a result of passages in the Bible used against them or us? Any comment on that? Maybe Donna?
Yes. I can tell you that the church overall has been conservative, and some people have not seen the dynamics of the African American church, meaning that yes, they are socially progressive. Okay, so social justice progressive, but also conservative. So you got two of those dynamics playing together because that's how you receive the civil rights movement. The black church came together. And mm-hmm. you have the dynamics of political being religion and religion being politics for the African-American community. But their religious
understanding and belief, very conservative. So that has changed now, and I'm happy to tell you that if you watched any of the ballot initiatives that we won in the past 2 weeks, you'll note that Maryland had over 35% African-American outreach, and they came through and supported marriage equality. And, yes, that is the first time that you've seen ministers of big denominations stand up and support. And you also saw the NAACP come out in support of marriage equality. And you've seen the president step up and say he supported marriage equality. So there has been a turn.
Well, for the few minutes that we have left, there's another question that came in that has to do with remedies and approaches. So let me just read it, and then I'd like to hear you all, your all's response to it. What are some promising team-building approaches that might be used to forge productive partnerships between LGBT and people of color communities? Now, this is the wider community. Would either one of you like to start?
I'll let Jim go first.
Well, one of the things is that we have to be careful when we set up that question, because it's a question that says those are two distinct communities. Mm-hmm. And so it's a question, you know, when we say that, we really end up saying somehow that we don't all have a race and a sexual orientation, all of us. And that all of us has an investment, I think, in doing something about discrimination and oppression based on both race and sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. And it also tends to render all people of color with the same-sex sexual orientation invisible when we set those up as if they were two completely distinct groups. So there's even kind of a deceptive way we have, we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot sometimes when we start to talk about it. Because we're talking about it is if we don't all have a stake in ending both racism and heterosexism, and sexism for that matter, too.
So
some of it is changing mentality.
Great. Donna?
You can look at things that are cross-cutting issues, issue-driven pieces that work, support around health care. Support around jobs and the economy, those things ring true to LGBT people of color and connects the LGBT organizations into what LGBT people of color are looking at. So I'll give you an example. Stop and Frisk in New York City about 3 months ago. Reverend Al Sharpton held a rally around this, and this is a big deal in people of color communities, but for the first time, LGBT organizations joined Reverend Al Sharpton and the NAACP with Ben Jealous to support the rallies against Stop and Frisk. Now, that's when you see team-building coalition working.
Well, I tell you, there's a lot more that we could talk about on this particular subject that is really one of the biggest taboos in racial healing, and why we wanted to bring this as part of our show, because it's not talked about in public so much. I want to really thank both of you for participating today and for your commitment to both racial healing and to all forms of oppression. Thank you, Jim Croteau and Donna Payne.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.